How's it going, and welcome to episode 58 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. Of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80Grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by my co-host, Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter himself at Hastings Kevin. And Kevin, it is good to be back again after a long hiatus of a couple of weeks. I came back just to miss another week. And with what's been going on in the background of my life, it's been a little hectic. So I am pretty happy to be back recording with you. And it gives me some semblance of consistency to be doing, being here recording every Saturday night with you, and miss a couple of weeks like that was, it didn't help. I'm glad to be back. How's your week been going?
It's going well. The problem is weather, and it's 107 degrees here in Texas today, and it's raining everywhere else. So that's making a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight and what I'm going to write about for tomorrow, everything leading up to our bids Sunday evening, much more difficult. We have a lot of teams that haven't just missed a game, but have missed multiple games.
I'm sorry. I have to rewind a little bit. 107. I don't think there's enough times where you can say it's just a dry heat is enough. I don't think that matters at that point. That's crazy. So I'm hoping you're enjoying that. We did get some of the rain here in Indianapolis. Nothing crazy. Nothing like the East Coast has been seeing, and both coasts, really, as you alluded to. Yeah, a lot of that has affected a lot of what we're going to talk about today, as you mentioned. And luckily, we have some backup to talk through it. Dave Swan joins us to break down some of the fab targets and to talk about how to keep track of everything going on today and into the future. Dave writes tirelessly over at pitcherlist.com. He contributes to the DFS Daily Breakdown, the Reliever Ranks daily article, the Batter's Box daily articles, as well as regularly publishing his Catchers to Stream and the big boy, the Expected Starting Pitcher Schedule article that comes out regularly as well. It's something we're going to talk about a little bit more later on in the show. Dave is also our co-member of Earth, competing alongside myself in GLARF at the Great Lakes region of the league, and many other leagues across the country, and actually now international now with the Canadian league going on, Surf. Dave, thanks for taking your Saturday evening to join us. How you doing?
Hey, Adam and Kevin. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing really well today. It's the nicest day of the year out here in the Midwest. It's not quite 100, but it was warm enough to actually do some gardening and getting the kids out for a bit. I can't complain. I watched a little baseball today, but otherwise it's just been a nice chill day outside.
Yeah, man. Like it was gorgeous in the general Midwest. I'm sure I think we got pretty much a mirror image down in Indianapolis of what you were experiencing this, especially the second half of the day. Just gorgeous. Sorry, Kevin.
It's all good.
All right, let's get into some of the news and notes that we've seen throughout the course of the week that may or may not have been affected by all those postponements that we've been seeing in doubleheaders. Kevin, I'm going to start off with you. Nick Castellanos left Thursday's game after getting hit by a pitch on his wrist and forearm. Roman Quinn took over his spot in right field during that game. Though it does look like Cassie has avoided anything serious, his x-rays did return negative results. My question is about Quinn specifically and whether or not he should be considered a stash on the chance that he gains regular playing time due to another injury in the Philadelphia outfield.
Yeah, this is something that Todd Whitestone and I touched on last week, and it's very intriguing to me. And this is one of those situations. Philadelphia hasn't played for a couple of days now, so we haven't really got to see what they were going to do the past couple of days with Castellanos banged up. I am really intrigued with Quinn. One of the most intriguing things about it, I brought this up last week, is versus left-handed pitching in his career, he's actually got some pop. Six of his eight career home runs and roughly 180 plate appearances. So in that situation, if he's going to play against left-handed pitching, I would be interested. And they have quite a bit of left-handed pitching coming up this coming week. Granted, three of those games versus lefties are against the Dodgers, and two of those lefties are Clayton Kershaw and Julio Urias. So not the greatest matchups, but you put on top of that his pinch running at the end of games. He had a pinch running stolen base last night, I believe, or the last game they played wouldn't have been last night. So for stolen bases, I'm interested here. I just really wish we could have got to see them play the past couple of days to see how often he's going to be in that lineup. But it appears he does come into the game as a late inning replacement nearly every game he doesn't start. So he's still a threat for stolen bases, even when he's not starting. I think for right now, if to play him, you would really have to have a big lead in your other counting stats. You'd have to have some really nice home run, RBI, and run totals, and you could put him in your lineup just hoping for those stolen bases. So as a stash, as you asked, I'm intrigued. It's just lots of times we don't have room for a guy like this on our bench if we're not going to be using him. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Hopefully the Phillies get to play these scheduled doubleheaders the next few days and get caught up, and we get to see just how much playing time he's going to get.
Yeah, guys like Quinn and like Tim LeCastro, if they actually get in a game, start a game, and find their way on base, they're a threat to get stolen bases for your team for sure. Quinn has had 9 plate appearances going into Saturday, and right. He's had 3 stolen base opportunities out of those plate appearances. He is stolen a base in each of those 3 opportunities. So yes, warning lights, small sample, yada, yada, yada. But we know this about Roman Quinn. Like he runs, that's what he does. And so if you, like you said, Kevin, I'm all about stashing a guy like this, especially in a daily moves league, maybe not so much in a weekly league or a shallow weekly league. He's pretty much guaranteed to at least attempt. And for right now, he's still 3 for 3. Stealing bases. He's got a good shot of making it to the next base.
And late in the season, guys like this become extremely valuable when a few stolen bases can really help us in the rankings and our other categories. But we know where we stand. If you don't have a spot for him right now, just keep him in mind because he's probably going to stay on a lot of waiver wires for a while. Pick him up a little earlier than you intend to start using him because other people are going to want to do the same thing.
You treat him just like a setup guy. Think you're stashing for a future closer role for sure. All right, Dave, the AL West got back 2 of their closers, speaking of which, with Ryan Presley returning to the Astros and Lou Trevino returning to Oakland this past week. Where does this leave the trio in Houston that was filling in, as well as Danny Jimenez in Oakland, on most fantasy rosters? And should we be expecting them to be at the top of our drop list this Sunday night?
Yeah, for me, in Houston, it's a little bit of a different one. I still think if you went to the clubhouse and you checked who they penciled in as the closer starting every day, it's going to be Ryan Presley. I understand the others have somewhat performed adequately, especially Montero. But as soon as he returned, the team showed him, as soon as Presley returned, Houston showed enough confidence to stick him back out there. The results were not good, but when you're dealing with a reliever, small samples get in the way of just judgment in general. And they left him out there and showed the confidence. And in doing so, he labored for 21 pitches right off of an IL stint. And so what it did was naturally turn him unavailable for the next outing. And so, of course, because Houston's good enough, they had another save opportunity. And they went with the hot hand in Montero. Now, I do see there possibly being a problem with Presley pitching back-to-back nights for the unforeseen future. Who knows? It could be a week or so while he gets himself. He's still somewhat always had somewhat of a health concern issue over the last few years that waffled him in and out of the IL to begin with. I still think it's going to be him towards the stretch and down the line. If you're picking up Montero or Neris, that you're just hoping, and it's a spec ad for me. On the other side, in Oakland, we've got it different. With Lou Trevino coming back, maybe there was a chance they're going to try and put him out there, see what he could do. The results have just been so bad since he's been on the field, like 12% barrel rate, walking just as much as he's striking out. And there's almost no strikeouts to begin with at a 15% rate. Then you flip it back the other way, and Danny Jimenez has been just spectacular. The big problem with him before was he just had too many walk issues. Just command was just out of control. And now it's quite the opposite. The guy is walking less than 6% of batters. has yet to allow an earned run. This is a guy you really want to stick in there. And as we get to later, there's probably going to be a lot of chances for Oakland over the next week for saves. So he's a guy I would probably really put on my radar.
I venture to guess that Jimenez is still rostered from Trevino's time on the IL. I would not be dropping him this week, possibly after the foreshadow, as you mentioned, the 9-game week that Oakland is seeing next week. As far as Houston goes, it's, yeah, that Presley not being able to pitch in back-to-back games is going to keep Montero on any roster I have him right now. He obviously seems to be the favorite of that trio between Stanek and Neris that were filling in for him as he's gotten the last couple saves. In Houston, I already dropped Neris last week in like a daily moves league. It's just not something that looked like it was getting anything going, but I would hold on to Montero until it shows, until, as you alluded to, they show that Presley can go in back-to-back games on a somewhat regular basis. All right, Kevin, week one's fab cash cow, Matt Brash, was sent down to AAA this week after an additional poor start on his resume. And to add insult to injury, he's expected that the Mariners will start transitioning him into a bullpen role in Tacoma. How difficult will it be for fantasy managers to stomach dropping Brash just a few weeks after spending, in some cases, over 30% of their budget?
It doesn't matter. You just have to do it. You got to. Doesn't matter how difficult it is to stomach it. You just got to suck it up and do it. You're going to need the spot. He possibly could become valuable again at some point. As a long middle reliever, a follower, that type of thing. And in that case, typically we can get those guys back fairly inexpensively on another Sunday night, but you can't take up a spot with him right now.
Just imagine if he like takes through this bullpen role really quickly and they call him back up and say after the All-Star break, and for whatever reason, they just say, you know what? He's so good. We're making him. We're going to call him up. He's going to be our closer. And then he goes for the same amount of money.
Yeah. All it takes is one save. And yep. Here we go again.
Yeah. All right. On that same note, Dave, with Brash being demoted, the Mariners have now promoted their other top pitching prospect, George Kirby. Will or should Kirby be going for more of a percentage of the remaining fab budgets that people still have than Brash did in week one?
So it's easy for me to say something like I saw this coming with Brash. This is a guy who never really saw time past double A. And even then he had issues with walks and strikeouts. And to think that he would take this big bump regardless of stuff and it wouldn't be a similar issue with him in the majors just put way too much cause for concern for me to even start rostering. I think in my TGFBI, he went for 250 plus, and my mind was blown when this happened right away. But shiny new objects do this to people, especially in Fab. And prior to this, the person who I thought that the Mariners should have gone with was George Kirby. And it almost oddly worked out that way that he's going to be the one replacing him. I would, if I'm just absolutely desperate on pitching, put like a nice chunk and a big wad out for Kirby. I think the stuff will play up. I think he's going to be the guy that they go with in that fifth starter role for a little while to see what happens. It's a good enough team. There's plenty there for me to say, go ahead and spend quite a bit on him. I think he should be.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, he was scheduled to start on Friday in Northwest Arkansas, got pulled from that start, obviously, with the call-up. Looks like the Mariners have a set rotation through the weekend. The next opening that I see is Monday. So that makes me wonder whether or not he's actually going to be available in an NFBC format that has the rules that they're not available until they've made their MLB debut this year by Saturday night. It doesn't look like he's going to do that unless he gets put into a bullpen situation during tonight's game as we're recording this, which I doubt will happen. So it looks like unless he was drafted in your league on an NFBC format and dropped, you might have to wait till next week, which there's a possibility he gets two starts next week and we'll get plenty of major league innings under his belt to put a more educated bid out there come next Sunday. So I'm sure we'll be talking again about George Kirby in next week's episode.
Yeah, Adam, I believe that he's starting on Sunday. But that's not
even better.
It's not in time because they update the player pool at 10 a.m. So he still will not be available in NFBC pools this week, as you said, unless he was drafted and dropped. So as we like to say, check. and see, because everybody else might assume that he's not available to next week. You might be able to sneak him in this week. Hmm. But yeah, it appears he's going to start on Sunday. I was corrected by one of our friends of the show and listeners, Anthony Gialde, today on Twitter when I was posting about it. He's not going to be available till the 15th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Anthony, for that. All right, Kevin, we'll stick with you and go to another call up. The Red Sox called back up outfielder Jaron Duran to fill in for Enrique Hernandez hitting the COVID IL. Duran made his 2022 debut at the leadoff spot for Boston on Friday, recording a triple on the day. And as fast as he looked on the base path, his stint in Boston was equally as quick. And he was shipped right back down the Mass Pike to Worcester on Saturday, giving me some inclinations that he could be this year's Edward Olivares going, because that's a short trip between Boston and Worcester. Would you still be interested in bidding on Duran this weekend now that he's available in NFBC, even if he wasn't drafted, because he did make a debut? And with the likelihood Duran spends more of the season racking up that mileage between Worcester and Boston, just like Olivares did between Omaha and Kansas City last year.
Yeah, I'm actually more interested now because the conservative bids that I like to make are more likely to work out this week. I think some people are going to forget about him, not necessarily forget about him, but not be interested any longer. And he's killing it at AAA. He's got 7 stolen bases and a couple of home runs in only 15 games at AAA. Had that triple in his one appearance for the Red Sox the other night. And yeah, I see him coming back fairly soon. The Red Sox offense has not been very good. We also touched on this a little bit last week with Todd. And you can love Jackie Bradley's defense all you want. At some point, if you got players that can play defense as well as produce when they're in the batter's box, then, you know, he's walking over 13% of the time and striking out less than 20% of the time. Triple A. I really hope it's not an Edward Olivares situation from last season and that we get to see him back soon. And I kind of think we will. If I have a spot that I'm putting bids on him.
I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I'm just hoping it's just not a mirror image of what we saw out of Duran last year when he got the call up. He was killing AAA last year as well, and he got the call up finally and just did not adjust to major league pitching as well as he made it look like he could in after his production in AAA. So I'm going to have to see a little bit more out of him in Fenway, probably to be extra interested. I'll probably be one of those people you alluded to that's not as interested, especially as injuries seem to be up quite a bit this first month of the season as they have been in the last couple of years. I know I have more than enough rosters that I am fighting the injury bugs. And I'm not sure that I have the space to be stashing Duran at this point in the season.
My hope is that I kind of wonder if, you know, that the power almost came out of nowhere last season. He had 16 home runs in less than 300 plate appearances in those AAA games. And yeah, he's got a couple of home runs this year, but it seems that he's more about the getting on base, using his speed, and maybe that if he can continue that mindset when he is with the Red Sox, that the results are going to be better this time around.
Yeah, I alluded to that tidbit about injuries being up. That came from Derek Rhodes' tweet that he put out earlier on today about the injuries through the first 30 days of the season are up 9% compared to last year. They are up.
Which was already up.
Yep,
from other years.
Yes, exactly. 24% up compared to the last full season of 2019 and 44% up from 2018. Derek does great work with not just injuries, but graphics and stuff like that over at Baseball Prospectus. So make sure you're checking him out at DRHOA3 on Twitter. But that just shows you that there's a lot of teams out there that are, especially on a short bench, like you see on most NFBC format leagues, you're spending all your time stashing your really good IL players and maybe not taking as much chance on those prospects that you're hoping will come back up like a Duran. But if you got the space, by all means. All right. The prospect train does keep on rolling along, and Dave, the setup for a possible Fabapalooza or Fabageddon or Fabapocalypse, whatever you want to call it this year, 2022, it continues with the debut, or this season's debut, of Juan Yepes in for the Cardinals. His debut on Wednesday saw him starting in right field of all places, followed with back-to-back starts in the DH spot on Thursday and Friday. He's already collected 5 hits in those 3 starts, 3 of them being for extra bases. How much hype should be focused on Yepes here, and should we be expecting to see him for an extended amount of time in St. Louis?
Well, Adam, we did get to see a brief glimpse of him last season, but it was only in the playoffs where he was on the roster. He actually didn't make it into the field. But that, again, it shows me the confidence that maybe St. Louis had, is that they put this guy on the roster. They realized he could hit, and he was spectacular in the minors last season. I was slightly worried that the power wouldn't translate to the majors. It hasn't been something that he's been taking him out of the park, but the guy can swing the baseball bat. He's got a terrific hit tool. And just another point to it is, there is just nothing on that St. Louis bench. Everybody's hitting below the Mendoza line. And if you're a fantasy manager just looking for offense, as most of us are in this dead and ball era, like, you're going to spend money. You're going to find him needing to be on your roster. I have plenty of teams, as I'm sure we all do, that are lacking offense. And we're looking at spending for this one too, albeit a prospect or not. I think he's sticking up for quite a bit until something happens.
Yeah, it was interesting just to see him in right field to start off the season. If you go to format like Yahoo, he already has first and third base eligibility because he had some experience at those positions in the minors. He's at first base only right now in the NFBC. If he were to get outfield eligibility, he needs 9 more games in the outfield to do that. So it might take a while, but it would be, he'd make him a lot more interesting for sure, especially with the hit tool, as you mentioned, and the power that he can provide. I guess I was just a little bit more curious that Nolan Gorman wasn't the one that could make that kind of leap, especially with the production he's been showing in AAA to start this season and the versatility he's been being groomed to play all over the infield, obviously being blocked at third base, his natural position as he was coming up. So he's forced to move over to second base, play a little first base as well. So we'll see if he gets, or when he might get the call up right now. I'm interested in Yepes for sure in places that I need that corner help.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this, Adam, is that he's in the lineup again on Saturday evening at designated hitter, 2 more hits. And I think that sticks against right-handed starters. Pujols, they'll let Pujols DH against lefties, but Yepes is going to be in there against righties. And if he continues to hit like this, then they're going to find a spot for him, like in right field, on the days that Pujols is the designated hitter. So it will be, he should get more playing time than just the strict platoon.
Nice. All right, Kevin. Well, Carlos Correa in Minnesota has just a bruised middle finger. It's not broken. But Luis Arraez tested positive for COVID and thus was placed on the COVID IL for the Twins, with Miguel Sano also on the shelf for a while. It appears to provide recent call-up Jose Miranda even more of a clear path to everyday playing time. And on top of that, the Twins called up top prospect Royce Lewis to join the fray of Fabapalooza this week. Are you looking at either of these guys to provide added production in your fantasy lineups, or is there anyone else in Minnesota? And I feel like we've had this conversation multiple shows last year. Minnesota, I think it was mostly the outfield last year. Now yes, we're talking about the infield.
Absolutely.
And is there anybody else you have your eye on that can fill the void left by, at least the short-term void by Correa and the long-term void by Sano, and who knows how long with Arraez?
They got Kirilloff back. That helps. And so they actually had Gary Sanchez as a designated hitter this evening with Jeffers catching. I see that catching on a little bit as well. I like both of these guys, and I think it's just the way you lined it up. Miranda is probably going to get more of the playing time right off the bat. I think Correa is going to come back a little sooner than we thought. So that hurts Lewis in the short term. But he may stick around or may come back soon, like we were talking about with Duran. Polanco thus far this season isn't having anything close to the year he had last year. And so there's lots of different paths in Minnesota. Like you said, we talked about him nearly every week for much of last season. I like both of these guys, and the fact that Correa is probably going to be back sooner than we think. Kirilov's already back. Once again, this could temper the bids a little bit for us tomorrow night. Although I think Miranda's probably going to be out of my price range.
Yeah, with Lewis, I'll be interested to see if they continue or they, you know, force the issue with him and keep him up with his limited outfield experience. That I know that he was playing a little center field in the Arizona Fall League a couple of seasons ago when he won MVP. I'm not sure how much of time he spent since coming back from his injuries out in the outfield, but he always has that to fall back on if he really wants to force their hand to keep him up in the majors in the infield spots or not. Obviously, he can move over to second base a little bit, fill in both middle infield positions, but knowing that he possibly could be forced, kind of Andrew Vaughn style, hey, the opening is there. If you want to play, we could throw you in the outfield for a couple games and see how it goes.
I definitely hope it doesn't happen. It's so much fun watching him play, but they have a center fielder that gets injured quite often.
Yeah, I'm not aware, but I'm sure we'll hit on it in a future episode. He's injured right now. What am I talking about? Buxton didn't put it in the news, but I remember reading it. Oh, was it his back or his hammy or something? I forget. Something tight. Yeah, something tightened
him today. Yeah. Yeah.
It's shocked. I tell you, I'm shocked.
It's unfortunate, man. He's so much fun to watch.
So good. Baseball is better when Byron Buxton is playing baseball.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave, the Milwaukee Brewers decided to shift their roster a little bit and go with a larger bullpen, calling up Luis Perdomo from AAA Nashville. It's in an effort to keep Aaron Ashby in the starting rotation through the next month, as they stated. This roster move came at the expense of Keston Hira, who, frankly, has been terrible. Hira's sent down to Nashville, and he'll inevitably hit six home runs in the next four games because that's what he does when he gets sent back down. He gets pissed off and then just tears the cover off baseballs. But for now, he takes whatever competition for the first base job he was left with him down to AAA, leaving Rowdy Tellez to do everything he's been doing for Milwaukee. How bought in are you to what Rowdy's been doing in Milwaukee? And is there any reason he should be left on any, even the shallowest leagues, waiver wires at this point?
No, Rowdy Tellez should be picked up. Quarter infield is one of the very difficult spots to fill, thanks to third base being terrible. And I had to do a batter's box, and he was my feature player this week. And when I pulled up just how few leagues he was rostered in Yahoo, it was staggering. I think at that point it was like 75% of leagues he wasn't even in. And I know Yahoo maybe doesn't have the corner infield, but it was just staggering to me that he would be like that. The power has always been there. He's been a Statcast darling. You know, his exit velocities, max exit, all the power metrics, the descriptors that we're looking for are off the charts. Go look at our player pages. Everything lights up red for Rowdy Tellez. And it's hard to not just buy into everything he's doing. And that lineup right now is just, it's white hot. And they're producing night in, night out. Lefties, righties, doesn't matter who they're putting out there. He's getting it done, and you should. Just, again, check that wire. You just never know.
Yeah, he's the only actual option Milwaukee has to play first base, too. So regardless of any kind of platoon you think he might have been in at any point, like, it's just not really an option at this point. At this moment, Saturday night, he's still only 63% rostered across Yahoo leagues. Right. And as you mentioned, yeah, it's Yahoo. They don't have the corner, but he's still the 12th ranked player across Yahoo Fantasy as well. So I'm not sure what anybody that doesn't have, say, Freddie Freeman or Vlad Guerrero at first base is doing to not warrant his pickup at this point. All right, Kevin, we're going to finish things off right here. And don't think I was going to get through the whole episode without making you talk about MJ Melendez, and because I am. Your Royals brought him up earlier this week with the injury to backup catcher Cam Gallagher. And thanks to a scheduled day off on Thursday and a raid out on Friday, he's only played in three games since the call up, starting at DH in his debut on Tuesday and started behind the plate on Wednesday. Tell me, because I've got him a bunch of places that I used a waiver priority in one of my Yahoo leagues on him when he got the call up here. Can Melendez do enough in his time in Kansas City to keep him up even after Gallagher returns from his hamstring injury?
Yeah, I think when Gallagher returns. And there hasn't been an update since the day he went on the IL. Mm-hmm. I have not heard an update on Gallagher. But when he returns, I believe he is still the backup catcher. This is one of those situations that we referred to earlier. The rainouts are really putting us in a bind here. They had the off day Thursday, rained out Friday, rained off Saturday. They haven't played since Wednesday. So we haven't seen. But what I am hoping is what we're going to see with Carlos Santana also on the IL is Salvador Perez as the designated hitter and MJ Melendez as the starting catcher for the time being. Don't know how that will work out when Santana returns either, but it would have been nice to see if that's what was going to go on for the past couple of days. I think there's a path here. There's also, this is off the subject a little bit, but Salvador Perez for the first couple of weeks of the season picked up right where he left off last season. And he's been bad, really bad for 2 weeks. He's swinging at everything that's 3 feet outside the zone. And I'm really wondering if those vision issues that he's had in the recent past are bugging him. So there's another possibility of a pathway for playing time. So while I don't think it's a guarantee that he's going to stick, I think there's multiple paths. And so I think for the first time of the many times you've asked me about this, I think there's a chance Melendez sticks here. And yeah, definitely going to have my bids in on Sunday evening.
Man, Sal Perez is not the only Royal who has just been terrible at the plate, Kevin. Like, I don't know what is going on there, but they've become a team, at least in the first month of the season, that you can definitely stream against. I'm Whit Merrifield is not doing anything. Bobby Witt's coming around.
See. Edward Oliveras has been a main. Andrew Benintendi's been good. That's it.
Yeah. So something to keep an eye on there. I think Melendez did in the one game he did start behind the plate, let up 2 stolen bases on the base pass while he was back there. So something to keep an eye on there, as we will talk a little bit more about later on in the show when you are trying to figure out how to stream some stolen bases out there, especially in daily leagues. Keep an eye out for that situation. All right, now that is enough news and notes for this episode. We're going to get into a little talk about how you look ahead into the season to make some decisions today that might not affect your roster for weeks at a time in certain situations. But before we do that, we're going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we are back. Of course, I am Adam Howe. We have Kevin Hastings and Dave Swan joining us this week. And Dave, I wanted to talk to you before we get into our recommendations about, you do a lot of writing over at Pitcher List, a lot of regular writing, as I talked about in the intro here. A couple of those articles are looking backwards, looking at the day before, looking at the best hitters of the day, looking at best reliever situations of the day. But one of the bigger articles that you currently take on is our SP future schedule article. And we're looking about 3 or 4 weeks ahead at what matchups starting pitchers are going to get. And of course, always subject to change, always something that we're always struggling with, trying to guess. We talk about this every episode with looking ahead at possible 2 start pitchers, not this week, but next week. But let me ask you this, like, when you're doing this or when you're looking at anything into the future, how much advantage are you really getting by looking 2, 3, 4 weeks advance, just in starting pitching, but in any kind of matchups that you might be looking at for, you know, platoon splits or anything else? How do you, what do you feel is the advantage there?
you know, I think, Adam, the biggest advantage is I'm constantly like deciding the roster ahead of time for what I'm doing. And this helps me the most when we're talking about fab, especially when you're looking at those conditional like dollar flyers, the things that if you aren't getting your key target, if you completely whiffed at anybody in Fabapalooza or Fabageddon, this is where that guy that you've noticed that could have a good stretch in a couple weeks could come back to just save you a ton of cash if you can, you know, just put him on the bench, see what happens for a couple weeks. At least that's where I'm noticing is I save a little bit more fab money looking at it as far ahead as I can.
Yeah, saving fab is the name of the game. At least it's the name of this episode for the most part in this podcast in general. I can feel you on that one. Kevin, we're always talking about stashing relievers and stashing prospects and getting them on the cheap now rather than waiting until they're the hot item. You talked about Jordan Hicks 2 weeks ago. Get him now before he starts getting up to that 5 or 6 inning threshold that he could be getting up to as an example. Like, how much are you seeing more risk though in spending even cheaper amount of money, like $5-6 of your fab rather than $50 or $60 worth of your fab more often and seeing more failures? Or are you seeing more success in those that keeps you going back to the well?
No, I still think it's the way to go. And you're not going to hit on everybody, but when you do, it works out. Even if it's just for a schedule that you like 2 weeks down the road, it's not always going to work out. But when it does, the fab you're saving to continue to do it again, this is just an ongoing cycle. And I think your fab is better spent that way. It goes longer. You can continue to get more of these guys if you're getting them in advance than if you're paying full freight for them. By the end of the season, you're out of money in July and you can no longer do it. Yeah, I still think it's the way to go, but easily.
Yeah, Dave, when you're doing this starting pitcher schedule article, how many variables are you considering that could change when you put out the article, not while you're just updating it? And I wrote here in the notes as example, last year we saw the Tigers turn into an offensive juggernaut for about a month or a month plus, and they were just outscoring everybody when we all had it in our heads that they were somebody we could easily stream against and not a concern, yada yada. How deep are you looking into, hey, the possibility of this team all of a sudden being good, or any other variables that I'm not talking about, cross your mind as you are writing up these matchups?
No, I do get quite a bit of response about that, specifically when I'm color coordinating ranking offenses. People tend to make comments about, well, the team's been very hot, how can they still be bad, quite often. And it's the nature of the beast. These small samples are going to kind of cloud your judgment when you're starting to pick up matchups, and you just have to step back and look at the team as a whole. If Byron Buxton isn't playing for a week, that Minnesota Twins lineup gets way worse. And just because they've been hot does not necessarily mean one thing or another. And you do need to at times just step back, take a surface stack look away and try and focus in on some of those underlining metrics, and it'll help you out a lot better that way.
Yeah, and of course, in theory, you're picking up these players well in advance of what could possibly happen. As we talked about earlier, you're not spending a whole lot of money on them. And so if it does take a turn and you're not going to actually use those matchups and you're dropping these players, you're not losing a whole bunch of your fab, but to do no skin off your back, if you will. That's good. We're always talking about how important it is to look ahead. We talk about the schedule. We talk about looking for futures to spark pitchers. So I'm all about that. You guys should be keeping an eye out for Dave's article over at Pitcher List to just get an edge, especially when you're looking at those pitchers that are only 50-40% rostered in your leagues, easy enough to be picked up, especially if you're in like a fast finger league or even just a one-day waiver league, not so much a fab league. Guys that you should be looking at ahead of time to see what they have ahead for them. All right, let's get into our recommendations for this week. We're only going to look 1 week ahead here most of the time. And as we do, we go through category by category what you should be looking for. Make sure you are looking to see where you are in your standings already. It's already May, by the way. It's already May, only a couple months left of the season. You should be keeping an eye on all those categories now. We will start off with our power category. And Kevin, I'm going to start off with you here. who is going to give me a couple home runs if I need them this coming week?
Yeah, I'd like to start with a guy very similar to Rowdy Tellez, like Dave was referring to in Yahoo leagues. And Franmil Reyes was absolutely horrible for the first month of this season. And so he got dropped in some places. He's available in 25% of Yahoo leagues right now. And over the last five games that have come in just the last 3 to 4 days, he's got multiple hits in at least three, if not four of them. He's got another home run. Last I checked before, I think he's got a couple of more hits this evening. But as I checked late this afternoon here on Saturday, he was like 7 for his last 16. Franmil Reyes is heating up. If he was dropped in your shallow league, grab him. Another guy I like that is universally rostered in the 15-team main event leagues, but pretty big gap. He's available in over 60% of 12-team online championships and 95% of Yahoo leagues. Christian Walker, although his batting average looks absolutely horrendous, has 6 home runs already this season and is hitting the baseball extremely hard, and his BABIP is ridiculously low. That batting average is going to come up, and I think the power continue. He suffered through some injuries the past couple of seasons. I think we finally are seeing the Christian Walker that we were expected to see the last 2 years, and he's widely available in 12-team teams and less.
Yeah, going back to Franmil, he did go 3 for 6 on the day. He's got a bomb, 2 RBIs, and obviously the run scored with the home run. And I think, yeah, like you said, he went 3 for 3 the other day. So he's obviously seeing May has been friendly to the Franimal. So the fact that he was dropped,
his 30 home runs last year came in spite of a 32% strikeout rate. We can live with that. He still hit 254. So far this season, he was striking out 44% of the time. But over the past 4 or 5 days, he's bringing that back down to his normal 32%.
That's also in spite of only having 418 at-bats last year, because he missed a good chunk of change due to injury. So, I mean, the dude knows how to do a lot with a little amount of time, or at least a limited amount of time. So somebody to keep an eye on for sure. The fact that he's available just... yeah, it is what it is. Dave, who you got your eye on this weekend for added power?
So a guy I'm looking at moving ahead in deep formats, this isn't somebody that I think you're going to be able to find, but shallower leagues, the people who don't play specifically in the NFBC, you're talking a guy like Jesse Winker is just extremely unlucky at the moment. You're talking about a guy with double-digit barrel rates the last 2 years, and now he's at 3%. The plate discipline is just as brilliant as ever. BABIP is 220 for a guy who should not have a low BABIP based on the way he's playing. So if he's available, take a look at him. Try and find a way to get him on. But like I said, he's not going to be rostered. He's not going to be available in so many, just on shallower leagues. The guy, if I'm looking at for a really deep league of 15 teamers as well, Christian Walker's battery mate, David Peralta. He's a lefty. He's shown that he had power in the past. He's starting to swing a little bit better this year. And I know he worked in the offseason to retool his swing, looking to get back to that extra power. Sometimes he does end up on the strong side of a platoon. But look, I scraped my TGFBI league before we started to see what was out there last week. And the leading home run hitter was John Birdie with 2. So if there is anything that can hit a home run out there, just pick him up at this point. It's just not out there.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Well, home runs are not happening, and at least not in the month of April across the board. All right, well, let's get away from home runs then and go into a little bit of speed talk. And I'm going to start us off here, but just going into some information that I've been collecting and revolving around who you should be streaming against, or at least looking against, maybe not so much looking at the players themselves to steal bases, but who are they running up against. And some pitchers that I will be targeting when I'm looking at some matchups for some possible stolen bases are Noah Syndergaard, Sandy Alcantara, Tyler Molly, Merrill Kelly, Zach Thompson. These guys they're in the top. They all have a 10% or higher stolen base attempt percentage, which is going to be the times runners have had an opportunity to steal and have taken that opportunity. So that is when they're sitting on either first or second base with the next base open and then at least one pitch with that has not had made contact with has been thrown. And those guys that I just mentioned also have an above average stolen base percentage allowed as well. So the runners that are attempting are making it to the next base. And these guys all have, they are all creating more opportunities per batter faced than most other teams. They all at one, every three batter they face has seen an opportunity ahead of them after getting out of the batter's box. And so they're giving the opportunities to the runners. They're not holding their runners. And then they're not doing their catchers any favor by getting the ball to them in the right spot to give them a chance to throw them out. So it's a triple, a trifecta of opportunities. Again, that's going to be Syndergaard, who has had a long history prior to his injury of not holding runners. Sandy Alcantara, Tyler Molly, Merrill Kelly, and Zach Thompson. These should be guys you should be taking a look at. So specific players that I'll be looking at this week, I'll be in a more shallow format. Taylor Walls, if he's still available, is 37% rostered in online championships. I think he's available in one or two main events. So he's still out there in those deeper leagues, but far and few between. And Brett Phillips, in a very deep cut, Tampa Bay faces Syndergaard, who has a 22% stolen base attempt percentage, and Reed Detmers, who's above average as well, 8.3%. Then when they face off against Toronto, Kevin Gausman has an over 11% SBA, and then Alek Manoah also above average at just shy of 8% over the course of the next week. So they have some really good matchups. Brett Phillips, who obviously doesn't play every single day, does still run fairly often and will have an opportunity. If he plays, I think Tampa has six games next week. If he plays half of those games, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't at least get a stolen base attempt, if not an actual stolen base. And Taylor Walls, with all those nice matchups that he sees on the pitching side, as long as he can get on base, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't net at least one stolen base for you next week. And a very deep cut. And I'm just going to keep going with the Arizona love that we're all talking about. Jordan Luplow, who is 0% roster across main event and online championships. He has no guarantee of playing time. He is playing right now. He's in the lineup today, again, batting second, which is where he's been placed in the lineup when Arizona does put him back in since coming back from his oblique injury, which obviously is something to keep an eye out for. But he can fill in any outfield position, and he's been DHing a lot as well as he's come back. He has a 22% stolen base attempt percentage of his own. That's only through nine stolen base opportunities, which just means that he's attempted two stolen bases, but in a very short or a very small sample of opportunities. He has a slightly above average sprint speed this year, and Arizona has some very favorable matchups against Elizer Hernandez, Drew Smyly, Marcus Stroman, Sandy Alcantara, who all have above average SBA percentages, I mentioned, with Alcantara being one of the top ones. So these are the guys I'm looking at based on the matchups that they are seeing as well. Keeping an eye out for those guys. Again, Taylor Walls and Brett Phillips in Tampa, and then Jordan Luplow in Arizona. Kevin, you got a name on here as well. Who are you looking at for a little bit of speed?
Yeah, I got a couple of them. And once again, a shallower league, Adam Frazier is available in almost half of 12 team online championships. It's not always just about stolen bases when we're talking about speed. It's about runs scored. He's leading off every single day and has scored 16 runs this season. That's a 100 run pace for the season. Those guys aren't widely available, and he's doing it with a 243 batting average. If your entire fantasy team is hitting 243 right now, you're probably in the 80th percentile. That's how bad batting averages are around the league. And then another name I'll throw out there. He came up briefly earlier. We're hoping he doesn't suffer the same fate he did with his frequent flyer miles like he did last season. But Edward Olivares is leading off for Kansas City. We think that, like we said, they haven't played since Wednesday, but he's been leading off and he already has two stolen bases. So if he's going to stay near the top of the order and play most days for Kansas City, that's another guy, and he will steal bases.
Oh yeah. And he has found a way to create opportunities for himself as well. He's created 0.8 stolen base opportunities per plate appearance. So almost a full, like almost every plate appearance that he's had, which is, you know, been 36 going into Saturday, has found a way at to first base to with a base open in front of him. I mean, he's running almost 10% of the time when he has that opportunity. So, he's going to run. Kansas City has a history of letting their guys run over the last couple of years for sure. And if they have the ability to do so, he has above average sprint speed. He's going to continue to run. So I like the
Oliveira. And everybody's really leery of everything we saw last season. He's only 30% rostered in the main event and 5% in online championships.
All right, Dave, as Kevin alluded to, some speed options you might have for us today that don't necessarily have to be stolen base. We're looking for runs as well. Who you got?
Kevin touched on a big one there for me, too. Edward Oliveira seemed like the guy that's going to be leading off. They're just going to let him run. And so if you are looking at something and you can do a stash, that's definitely a good way to go. Either way, he's going to be stealing if he gets a chance. We're looking like real deep because we've covered a lot of really good names, but Ben Gamel for Pittsburgh is open in quite a few leagues. He's got a little bit of stolen base ability. He leads off for Pittsburgh. It's not the most prolific of offense, but it plays 7 games this coming week, which should offer plenty of plate appearances, and he could chip in 1 or 2 and still get us a few runs while still doing it.
And Gamel yet to be caught on the base pass as well. I think, leading off for Pittsburgh, that's a good call out. Literally any regular leadoff hitter should be rostered in most formats just for those run scoring opportunities, if nothing else, even in Pittsburgh. All right. So speaking of opportunity, let's talk about the future schedule and anybody that might be able to take advantage of what they have coming up next week. 7 teams have a 7-game or more week ahead of them, and that's including the White Sox, Detroit, Oakland, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Dodgers, and the Yankees. Now, Oakland, as I talked about earlier, they have 9 games. It's including 2 doubleheaders scheduled, and that's not to say that more doubleheaders could be put on the schedule for them next week. Who's to say with all the rain that we've been seeing? And then the Yankees and Rangers now have, I didn't mention the Rangers, Texas as well, have a 7-game week due to Monday's rescheduled game from Saturday's rainout as well. More than a few teams with a full 7-game or more slate ahead of them next week. Keep an eye on, as we always keep an eye on Colorado. They will be at San Francisco 4-3, and they will be hosting Kansas City in Colorado 4-3 to end the week. Of course, setting up a possible Austin Gomber 2-stop, and we'll see how the 2022 version of that goes in San Francisco to start and then back home to end the week. Boston, Toronto, and Atlanta are the 3 teams that have 2 off days next week. So they only have the 5 Monday, Thursdays off. Keep an eye on who you got rostered there. You might want to fill in at least the first 4 days of your NFBC lineups with different bats if you have the luxury. So as we are looking to take advantage of that schedule, Kevin, who's out there that is worth gaining on, if nothing else, at least for 9 games?
I'm going straight for those 9 games. And a guy that was pretty popular a couple of weeks ago, but didn't quite produce as well as some had hoped, Kevin Smith for Oakland, has performed well against lefties. And in those 9 games, I see at least 2 starts against left-handed pitchers in the first half of the week and 2 more over the weekend. So we may be looking at more like what would be a good schedule for someone in a normal week with being on the short side of a platoon. But with 9 total games, there's also going to be a lot of matchups later in games to get in games as well. So it should be a bit better than that. It's only 16 plate appearances, but he's hitting .267 against lefties with his home run on the season. And so I see him probably having a pretty good week this week.
Nice. All right, Dave, anybody that we haven't talked about in other categories that you see could take advantage of their upcoming schedule next week?
A guy that hit that nail on the head with Kevin Smith. I think that's one that everyone needs to start by looking at and seeing if he's available. I think he's got plenty of pop and plenty of upside to be able to steal a base as well. It's a terrific call. It's out there. There's one guy that's jumps on my radar every once in a while, and that's Kyle Farmer. Cincinnati's going to have a lot of games. They've got the back half, I think, is in Pittsburgh, so that's not a great park to play in, but it does give you some chance of batting average with being such a spacious park. But getting a few games at home from the front half, if you can split it up, makes him somewhat valuable and can play a few positions for you as well.
Yeah, always good to see not only what park they're playing in, but obviously the opposing pitching that they will be facing off against. So regardless of Farmer, you're not picking up Farmer for his power anyway, for the most part. And so to put him in a park like PNC is going to, it's probably going to help him more than it helps a lot of other players. All right, let's move on to our pitching. And as we tend to do, we're going to look even further ahead at our future two-star options. As I tell everybody, we have a list here that I put together right before the show that tentatively, as Dave will know, this may change, that might be looking at two starts, not this week, but the following week, that you might want to pick up this week's stash, even if you don't want to play them for their first matchup, and take advantage of that two-step the following week for a little bit of a cheaper price rather than paying full freight next week. So, Dave, I'm going to start with you. You've got the list in front of you. I just want you to pick one or two guys here that you'd be really interested in putting a little bit of coin down this week, stashing them, whether you play them this week or not, regardless. And then give me one guy you think is going to be popular that you'd probably be fading.
Sure. The easy one for me that is a Brad Keller, Texas being a real spacious park. He's shown some good abilities with the slider, kind of improving this year. This is still a slider heavy league. And he's got a really good one. Going to Chicago as well, the second start, they've had some injury concerns, and there's still just an absolute ton of swing and miss in that lineup. And if he's on, you could have a couple of really good starts. The one that I see everybody really starting to spend some money to is Josh Winder. It was a sexy name. He had a really good start. I don't know if I entirely buy into his arsenal being as strong as the performances have been. But I think you're going to see him get rostered and made quite a priority for some people. And he's got a couple matchups. Houston, I would, I'm not starting anybody against Houston, but Oakland, Kansas City, I could see where people would be interested in.
Plus, being in Oakland and in Kansas City are going to be definitely tempting matchups for sure, regardless of your name, to be honest. Yeah, I think that's a pretty obvious, regardless of the fact that he doesn't have two starts until next week. Yes, based on his recent performance, he'll be a popular fab bid this week as well. I'll probably get outbid on him in a couple places just due to that fact. As I'm looking ahead, I'm not looking for this week, and I'm not going to be paying for what he's already done. So those are good call-outs there. As a reminder, everybody, the list I put together are only pitchers. The only options these guys have of picking from the pitchers that are less than 50% rostered across Yahoo and are, again, scheduled to go to not this week, but next week. The full list here that they're looking at is Jameson Taillon, Madison Bumgarner, Brad Keller, Taiwan Walker, Yusei Kikuchi, Josh Winder, Martin Perez, Antonio Sensatella, Jose Quintana, Kyle Bradish, and Tyler Hearn, who's only 1% rostered in Texas. Who on that list, though, Dave, do you think is going to be popular this week that you'd probably be fading?
The one that I'm fading? Maybe Kyle Bradish. I could see someone being on him, but that's just not someone I'm taking in.
Yeah, and that two-step against the Yankees in Tampa Bay is not probably enough for most people to kind of stomach, especially Baltimore, not quite warm enough in Baltimore to have his back in the offense side. Kevin, of this list, who might be stashing for the two-step that you like the most?
In shallower leagues, Jameson Taillon. I understand that in Yahoo, a lot of leagues are daily pickups, so it will become more popular. But grab him a couple days early for that two-step at Baltimore and against the White Sox. Offense hasn't been nearly as good as we expected. Baltimore's one of the league leaders in strikeouts. We know that ballpark with the fences being moved. And then put the way the ball is on top of that. The ballpark hasn't been nearly what it has been in the past for power either. So I'm jumping on that. Deeper leagues, I don't think people realize that Jose Quintana has been pretty darn good this year. He's only 13% rostered in the main event, and he has only given up more than two earned runs in a start once this season, and that was three earned runs. He had 9 strikeouts in a game against the Milwaukee Brewers in 5 innings, and that 5 innings is important because the past 2 games he has went 5 innings, getting us that opportunity for a win, and that's a couple of nice matchups at the Chicago Cubs, and then back at home against the St. Louis. Not as good of a matchup, but yeah, I'd grab him this week, probably sit him against the Dodgers and have him ready for that two-step the following week.
Nice. All right, let's go a little bit lightning round here, and we'll stick in the near future and not so much in the long future with wins and Canes for this week. Kevin, I'm going to stick with you. Who might you be looking to start this week off of Fab?
Brady Singer is almost universally available. It appears he will probably get the start Wednesday for Kansas City against Texas, at Texas. So pretty nice matchup, and he has been built up at AAA. He did go five innings in his last inning at AAA. The really intriguing thing, and the only thing I have to back this up, is what I have read from some Omaha Storm Chasers reports, is that he is actually using a changeup that looks pretty good. He's been publicly defiant in the past that he does not need a third pitch. He does. He's not good enough. Some pitchers can have two great pitches and be good enough to not have a third pitch. He's not. But reports are he's had a changeup, been using it, and it's looked good. So if that is the case, I like this start against Texas, and he'll probably stick with this demotion of Chris Bubich to AAA, or at least to the bullpen for now.
All right, nice. Yes, it's pretty apparent that a third pitch would do at least help. Never mind. Just be necessary.
Unless he wants to continue to be a reliever. He looked really good as a reliever for Kansas City, but they want him to start. He wants to start. He does need that third pitch.
I'll make your deal. You keep starting. Get the third pitch. Simple as that.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, who do you have an eye on for this coming week's starting situation?
I'm going to move over into Texas. There's a newer to the rotation guy, Glenn Otto, that I've always had a little bit of a thing for. I like his breaking balls. Doesn't have the greatest fastball, so he could be punished. But when you've got two good enough breaking balls, that's going to do it for me. And he gets a start against Kansas City, which we still don't know. They haven't played in a while. They could be rusty. We don't know. And there's enough there for me that he could touch us for a win and potentially put up quite a few Ks in that time with, like I said, a lineup that doesn't mind swinging a lot.
Yeah, and as we were lamenting with Kevin earlier in the show, Kansas City's not really doing anything with the bat, minus two or three hot bats as of recent. And as long as Sal Perez doesn't turn it around quickly, that could be a nice matchup for Otto as well, to your point. All right, we'll move on to strictly ratios, not looking at counting stats for pitchers here, just looking at the ERA whip ratios. So, Kevin, I'll start with you. Whether they're relievers or starters, what have you, doesn't matter. Who do you have your eye on that can help chip away at those ratios, even in early May?
Yeah, going back to the nine games that Oakland has this week, I like Domingo Acevedo for the Athletics this week. He's had a nice season, and two of his last three outings have been for four outs or more and zero earned runs. He's given up most of his runs in two appearances. He can be a blow up. He's got, I believe, 14 appearances on the season, and he's given up five of his six runs in two of those appearances. So it's a bit risky, but he's given up one run once and zero runs 11 times. And he does strike guys out as well. He's got a strikeout per inning. The other one is really interesting to me, and he may end up actually in the starting rotation. Roster Resource actually has him starting against the Royals this week. He will not make it five innings, I don't believe, because he hasn't pitched over two innings yet this season. But Matt Moore has been really good this year, if people haven't noticed, and he's crediting a new grip on his curveball. So that is definitely something to keep an eye on, and something that, like we were talking about earlier, this is the kind of the guy you can get for nothing right now and may turn out to be something in a couple of weeks.
Nice. Exactly. Get that cheap fab bid in now and stash him along and see how he does. If you have that ability, a flexibility in your roster, there's a target for you right there. All right, we'll move on to the final set category, everybody's favorite, and that's saves. Dave, I'm going to start with you in this one as a co-writer of the reliever ranks, hoping you have a little bit more insight here. Who might you be targeting for saves and or stashing for saves that might work their way into the role in the near future?
So for this, two guys jumped out to me really quickly. Ryan Helsley for the Cardinals is striking out over 50% of the batters faced. It's just off the charts. The velo is there. Everything is just eye-popping when you watch this guy pitch. I know there's been some back and forth as if Gallegos was going to be the guy. He is the guy. But if there's somebody else who's going to come in and vulture one away, Helsley's going to get one. And then if we stick with that Oakland theme, nine games, you're going to get a lot of guys pitching back-to-back. You're going to need to spread it around. I think Kevin hit the nail on the head with Domingo Acevedo being a very good one. But the guy I want to look to as well is the guy I thought they should have gone with as a closer and I think could be at the end is AJ Puck. The guy's stuff right now is just outstanding. He's going nothing but heavy slider, which he should, and mixing in the four-seamer, and then even working in a sinker for some ground balls. I mean, he's not giving up any runs. He's striking everybody out. And I could see him just picking up a save because they're overworked in that week ahead.
Yeah, with all these doubleheaders that we're seeing this week and with the A's scheduled next week, it's always something to keep an eye on. It's quite rare that you see even the strongest of closers closing out both games. Now, of course, it's still the A's, and they're actually winning a lot more games than I think a lot of people thought they would be at this point. But who's to say how many opportunities they'll see in the future? I think Ryan Presley and Leon Hendricks are the only ones that come to mind as of recent in the last like 2 or 3 years that I've seen close out and save both games of a doubleheader, which was pretty impressive. So it's pretty rare that you see it. So it gives you more opportunity to take flyers, especially when a team like the A's have multiple doubleheaders in the same week going ahead for those weekly leagues. Kevin, any stashes that you're looking at for this week in the closer or the save category?
I want to reiterate something that we talk about quite a bit. I'm not shuffling through typically my closer stashes. The 30th closer if in a 15-team league, if everybody is starting two closers and some start more, but the 30th closer right now has two saves. So don't be panicking in the save category yet. It's very top heavy. You get down the 16th most saves in baseball right now is four. So nothing yet, but one guy I do, and it seems like we go through this every year, there's always some struggles with Aroldis Chapman. We always have Chad Green and Loaizaga's names come up, but it does appear like if there are a prolonged absence of Aroldis Chapman, if there's an injury issue or if he's just bad for an extended period of time, it looks like it's going to be Clay Holmes.
Yeah, Clay Holmes is seeing a lot more time at the end of games for the Yankees. Loaizaga more in the fireman role. And Chad Green, though he did get a save recently or earlier this week, has shown time and time again that the closer role is just not for him. I don't know if it's the pressure.
Yeah, he's the opposite of the guys that perform better when they are closing. Mm-hmm.
Definitely better in that two-inning role or what have you. So I like Michael King, I like Chad Green, I like Loaizaga. Just I don't expect any of them to be the heir apparent to Chapman if he gets injured. I'm of the opinion that it will take an injury. I really like Chapman has proven time and time again that he's been bad and they put him back in there. Whether they give him a phantom IL stint and he comes back and then he's better now, or if they just find a way to just force him to improve, the Yankees are going to give him as much of a leash as possible. I think they've proven that Chapman's going to have to do a lot productively to lose the job, but injuries have not been kind to him either. So missing time in that way and opening up that closer role in New York is definitely an option this season. All right, Lynn, final category here for you guys to pretty much talk about anybody that we didn't have a chance to talk about in any other category, our wild card section. This is typically our speculative ads for pretty much any reason, whether it be a different prospect that is available but hasn't gotten called up yet, or just somebody we didn't talk about in the news and notes section for Fabapalooza 2022. Maybe it's just a guy that you think is going to break out, hasn't broken out yet. Any other kind of IL stash guys that are hurt right now but might be coming back shortly. Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Is there anybody that fits the bill here in this section for you?
Yeah, we talked about him earlier, and so this will be short and sweet. I think because of Enrique Hernandez returning from the IL so quickly, Duran is that guy for me. I think that his mindset is, like I said, more back to working on his contact and then doing his damage when he gets on the base paths and with a little bit of pop, and got those 16 home runs, a 30 home run pace out of his head. And that's not what he's going to do for Boston. And I think he'll be back soon.
Again, as a Red Sox fan, here's hoping. Everything you said is completely true. All right, Dave, final words here. What player did we didn't get a chance to talk about that you think you'd be targeting this week, even if it's just a stash?
This is the player who started on the major league team and was knocked down. He basically goes down to the minors, hits a pair of home runs, steals a bunch of bases, and comes right back in 9 games. And that's Bryson Stott from the Phillies. He comes back up today, and he starts in the 9 hole. He should be back on people's radars. We were all going gaga for him before the season started. He struggled much as most people did and got sent down because Alec Baum just outplayed him. And he should be somebody that people should be at least adding to their watch list.
Yeah, and if Stott can find a way to get in there, even in a multi-positional role for the Phillies, that could obviously help his stock in fantasy circles as well, if he can get that added positional flexibility for you as well. Especially for all those of us who drafted him in more than one draft champions type league, that we could use the extra flexibility. All right, that's going to do it for our recommendation section. Kevin, why don't you take us out with any final words of wisdom that you might have for everybody as May continues to roll along here for our fantasy baseball leagues?
I think it's still early, so don't panic, especially on veterans if they're not over 35 years old. We're seeing it with Franmil Reyes this weekend. Max Muncy comes to mind. Whit Merrifield comes to mind. These guys are good hitters. They're going to hit, so don't panic. If they're 35 or over, or maybe a 24-year-old, I might be worried a little bit, but these guys that are in their late 20s, early 30s, you can bench them. Franmil Reyes is on my bench in a lot of leagues this weekend. I'm not getting what he's doing, but he's going to be right back in my lineup this coming week.
Yeah, that's a good call. And yeah, I benched Franmil. I think I put him back in this week, but
oh, nice. I was in time.
I was getting
just on Friday. That's perfect. If you had him out early in the week and put him in Friday, that's perfect.
Just want to get him. I just need him to get that outfield eligibility. That would be nicer. All right, but that's going to do it for us. Dave, once again, thank you so much for joining us this week. Could you take a moment to remind all of our listeners here who you are, what you do, and all that good stuff, and anything that they should be keeping an eye out for, anything that you're working on moving forward?
No, thank you guys for having me on here. I appreciate it so much. I'm a big fan, and I do listen to the podcast weekly when I walk my dogs on Sunday. This is like one of the podcasts I put on for that short, brief time. And I did want to say, you can find me on Twitter, at Davithius. I try and be pretty active, follow us in the PL Discord, as a lot of us are. You can find my writing. It's usually, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a week. Something comes out, batter's box, relievers, and on there. And if I can, I want to take a moment. This woman probably won't listen to the podcast, but I want to say happy Mother's to my mother.
Nice. And of course, happy Mother's Day to all of those who celebrate, who are listening to us today. And the fact that you're spending your Mother's Day listening to us is an honor, if nothing else. All right, that's going to wrap us up for episode 58 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. We will be back every Sunday with detailed fab breakdowns throughout the 2022 season. And of course, keep a lookout for Kevin's companion article over at pitcherlist.com. It comes out every Sunday afternoon as well. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And Kevin is at HastingKevin. Of course, you can follow the pod itself at On The Wire Pod. I'd like to once again thank our guest Dave Swan for joining us. Follow him at Davithius on the Twitter. That's Davithius. Link in the show description as well. I am Adam Howe, and on behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. With that, we bid you goodbye.